Can you hear me without the microphone or with the microphone? Okay, I'll just have to hold it at a particular. It's like going to the opticians and asked them, can you see it better with or without, isn't it? And you don't quite know what the right answer is. But clearly, I've got this to hold. I've got the clicker to press at the right time. And I'm also mic'd up to be recorded by Justin. So I feel like I should be playing a part in Star Trek and lots of devices. Well, the topic for tonight is characteristics of religious education. And I put the slide there is the main building of the University of Glasgow, which is where I ply my trade normally. Some of you may know of the University of Glasgow. We get lots of Irish students to do our PGDE, and some have come back to do master's qualifications. It's a pre-Reformation university, goes back to 1451, founded by a pope, no longer a Catholic university, but we maintain an institutional commitment to Catholic teacher education. So it's the only place in Scotland where the academic qualification to teach in a Catholic school is offered. So that's why a number of us in Glasgow University School of Education have a commitment to what is Catholic education in the broadest possible sense. So that gives you a bit of context. The idea today is to talk with you, to have some dialogue over some of the broad characteristics of contemporary religious education in the Catholic sector, and also to move between looking at religious education and what the current ideas are regarding the life and times of the Catholic school. And these are debates which no doubt you're having in Ireland, we have them in the UK and Scotland, but they're also happening across the world. So our sort of big picture today is in three parts, to look at these, what we call the joys, challenges, trials, tribulations in Scotland, just to share some of the things we're doing in Scotland with you. Justin was keen that was part of the presentation, because we can learn from each other all the time, and I certainly have learned a lot from Ireland and the Irish way of doing things, not just in the last couple of days, but over the course of my career. I then want to speak a wee bit with them about education in and for faith, and finish this with some considerations of how the Catholic school can encourage evangelization and catechesis. Okay, so all of that's to be done in about 50 minutes. And I'm told that most of you have come today after some time in school. Is that correct? So there might be, will be a temptation in about half an hour's time to fall asleep. So if you do, don't worry, it's fine by me. It's been a long day for some of you, but it's good that you're here. But if you are waiting for the meal, it's always good to have that incentive, isn't it? Just having 5 minutes extra at break time. That'll keep you going. So where are we now? What can we begin with? Well, when we talk of religious education, what do we mean? What do we understand by the term? And the interesting thing to note is that when we consider the topic, the subject of RE across international jurisdictions, things naturally differ. The emphases differ, different ways of doing things, different contextual situations. But essentially, it's a subject on the school curriculum. So it's not the same as a Catholic ethos or a Catholic culture, obviously. It is a subject with all the different characteristics which a subject should have. We have a timetable slot, hopefully. We have resources, we talk about teaching methods and techniques. We have obviously run out, we're here. And we consider all of these things today. Now, the reason I'm saying it's a developing subject area in the second point, is this going to work? Can you hear me without it?
Yeah,
probably better. Is that okay?
Yeah.
That's actually not, I'm not hearing myself as much now, which is always a good thing. So the idea of being a developing subject area really comes from initiatives over the last 20 years, which have been trying, or maybe 30, to articulate what the vision for Catholic RE is. In the documents from the Congregation for Catholic Education in the last 40, 50 years on education give us some clues, but there's very little in the way of one substantial thematic overview of RE. And in fact, it wasn't until last year in Malta 2018 that we had the first international congress on Catholic RE. I was privileged to be there along with some people from the island of Ireland as well. It was great. And we
heard lots of different perspectives, but what was very clear was that the unifying concept is being united in tradition, but the ways in which we do things and understand things naturally is not the same. So we are aware of that. And if we were to have around the class interactive activity about keywords for international RE or its characteristics, we would be coming up with things like multidimensional, fluid, ecclesial, educational, faith-centred. Any others you could think of?
Inclusive,
good. Justin, yep, thank you. You'll get your tea if you want. You're okay, yes. Anything else? Hopefully short, they say. Or well-resourced. So, I mean, there's all sorts of things there that tells us we'll always be on some form of journey as we come to grips, either in your own country or internationally, with what is meant to be happening. So what is this quote is going on internationally? Well, a key thing, a key movement, is the move in Catholic education to look at intercultural dialogue. But the first point here is my own summary of certain things. It's where a space where rich theological traditions encounter often contested educational theories, offering the core knowledge at the heart of the Catholic school's wider faith mission. So that's one possible direction in which we can go. There will be others. I would never say that's the only one, not at all. But we're trying to navigate our way through faith, culture, education, political pressures, cultural tensions, the ways in which there are different levels of commitment in the school. All that forms a very interesting landscape. And the suggestion I was making in this article was that the move towards intercultural dialogue in Catholic education, which has been a key theme in the last 10 years, offers RE an opportunity to proclaim certain aspects of the Church's tradition in a school environment. To propose, to invite people to almost like come and see what do we have to offer, be it primary into secondary and then into the tertiary sector. So intercultural dialogue is certainly one of the big words just now in Catholic education. And again, as happens often in church documents from Rome, we get rather lengthy documents which when we look at and think, I really don't want to read that, it's too long. But there are aspects of education which we need to engage with. But intercultural dialogue is there just now. And the networks of Catholic schools we have internationally have been encouraged to find ways to do this in their own context, which is true to our own traditions, but also shows some recognition of the beginnings of a changing landscape for us. So therefore, we are at this of hinge in the historical journey. As things move, things are changing, and we are possibly privileged to be active players at this very significant moment. Now, as part of the dialogue, Justin asked me to talk a little about how we understand education, Catholic education, and religious education in Scotland. We have many ties with common Celtic roots, but our education system is not the same as the English education system. Often people talk about the UK education system. There's no such thing, okay? It's a very distinct way of doing things in Scotland. I'm not saying it's better, not at all. It's just a different way of doing things. And we have our own Bishops' Conference who fund a national education service called the Scottish Catholic Education Service. And they are responsible, really, for providing guidance and resources and advice to schools and to teachers. One thing which we often have to remind people from maybe the Latin countries is that in Scotland, all our Catholic schools, well, apart from two private ones, are fully part of the state system. They're not just funded by the state, they are actually part of the state system. They are administered, controlled by the local authorities, not by the church and its agencies. So that's an interesting political dimension. The Bishops' Conference and its reps have a responsibility to ensure that teachers of religious education are suitably qualified and approved, but the management of the school is a matter for the local authority. So we have this in an example of almost dialogue of church and state. How can you operate a Catholic school system network within the overarching state system where decisions are made which apply to all schools, not just to the Catholic sector? So that involves a degree of nuance, a degree of accepting of challenge, but also the it's one way of doing things, but it's not the only way. Okay, it's one way of doing things. The arrangement there is actually quite important because we have a curriculum structure called Curriculum for Excellence. Now, that's one of these great titles, as I said the other day there, that when you hear the title Curriculum for Excellence, nobody can really object to it, can they? Because how can you object to excellence? I mean, if you can't. So it's a very carefully chosen title. But the Curriculum for Excellence is, how would I put it, an architecture, an architectural structure which is designed to guide schools. Now, you may have similar kind of conversations in your own systems now. The Curriculum for Excellence came into play around the turn of the millennium, and its guiding force was to move away from a centralised body of knowledge to be taught, but more towards ensuring particular skills were done and particular attitudes were fostered. That was a summary of what it was trying to achieve. Does that ring a bell with you at all? Okay, so there's that. Now, of course there's merit, of course, and everything like that, but at the time this was coming through, some voices were raised in the profession and in the Catholic position in particular that the whole concept of Catholic education rested on a body of knowledge. We call it the Gospels in the Church's tradition. It rested on that. So the idea that education is simply a skills-led exploration of various topics or themes with no great central direction did not sit easily with the inherited traditions of Catholicism. So some debate took place, let's just say, over how that could be done. And we came to a situation whereby we go to the second of the documents here. We have something called This Is Our Faith. This is a centrally produced religious education resource or syllabus, which is used throughout the primary sector and into the early years of the secondary. Then a senior document comes in for the upper years of secondary or second level schools. And the purpose of this document is to ensure that, as best as we can, at every stage of the Catholic school, the pupils are given a chance to encounter or learn about specific church teaching on theological aspects. So we could categorise it in many ways. Essentially, that is what is going on. Predating that is a document called Religious Education Principles and Practices. That first one is available freely on websites in Scotland. The second one is a bit harder to find, because you normally school are asked to buy it. it costs money to buy the document, so you don't get a free copy anywhere unless you know someone in the know. But so everything else is available for free. Now, the first one, the Principles and Practices, is actually a very helpful summary of the basic ideas surrounding Catholic education. It's got currency beyond Scotland. It's a fairly short, I think it's 8 pages, overview of what the purpose of Catholic education is, and it's transferable to other contexts. The third document is a document of subject benchmarks, and these exist, again, these should be available on the web free, and there are subject benchmarks for all the curricular areas in Scotland now as a response to concerns from teachers, I think, genuine concerns that the skills-led approach was leading into a few rather blind alleys, misty alleys, not really taking people on an educational journey. So the government listened to the teaching profession and asked groups of teachers to construct subject-specific benchmarks, and these are now available for religious education and Catholic schools as well. Essentially, the benchmarks are a summary of the This Is Our Faith document. So that's how. So we can get the summary of the benchmark, and it shows you from first year of primary to the final year of secondary what should be taught at each stage. Not how it should be taught, but what should be taught. And it's worded in a particular way, which we will come to. So all of that has been... See, this body called Education Scotland is a centralising body. I don't know how centralised your system is here. But in Scotland, it's a small country like here, but our education system is very much from the centre and by the centre. And Education Scotland basically is a body which looks after the curriculum, but also looks after the inspection process. So there's a sort of there's not an independent inspection of schools. They are part of the curriculum body who inspect schools to see if they're doing what they have actually said. So that has caused a bit of tension as well. It didn't used to be the case. Formerly, the inspector was a bit more at arm's length, no longer so. There's been a move towards centralisation. But these documents for Catholic schools all come under the umbrella of Education Scotland. So even though they are authored by members of the Bishops' Conference and their reps, they appear on the Education Scotland website. So there's a sort of one example of a form of dialogue of church and state in getting the RE curriculum on the table. Like the Irish Veritas syllabus, the This Is Our Faith has a recognitio from the appropriate council in Rome saying it is appropriate for use in the Catholic school, its doctrine is solid, it's a good way of looking at things. So that is a sort of a thumbs up, a sign of approval that it can be used. Any questions so far? Justin?
Just maybe to try and summarise.
Yes.
Are you, in a sense, informing us that Catholic schools in Scotland are a minority of the entire school network?
Yes.
But that the government is very comfortable with their presence as Catholic schools and has allowed them a certain scope and latitude in the context of content?
Yes. Yes, but.
Yeah.
Yes, but. Yes. The word yes is actually one of these loaded responses. Yes can mean a lot of things. It's a long word, yes. But essentially, legally, this goes back to 1918. There's a major Education Act in 1918 which brought all the religious schools in Scotland into the arms of the state. It was a way to ensure there was parity of funding because the Catholic schools in the whole were run by religious orders and funded by parents who also pay to their local taxes for the state system. So they were paying twice for Catholic schools. So the 1918 Act was a recognition that actually the state should be funding education and all the schools came in. Now, not all of the bishops were happy with the move towards integration. There were some dissenting voices who suggested that losing this would be tantamount to losing the identity of the school. We can see that argument. But they did manage to enshrine safeguards we have to this day that the church, i.e. the Bishops' Conference in this case, has the right to approve Catholic teachers for work in schools. So each member of the staff ideally is not just academically qualified but has an approval by their parish priest usually. They have to approve them with regard to faith and belief to teach in a Catholic school. So that you have to go to your parish and have a form signed. Don't know if that happens here at all, but you have to have a form signed which goes into the office, say, and then you're granted approval, assuming you're approved. Okay? I'm not saying it's a perfect system, but that's what we have. And that was a safeguard for identity. The other safeguard was the Bishops' Conference would have the freedom to write a religious education syllabus in accordance with the Catholic tradition. And that's always been the case. It didn't give the church autonomy in the rest of the curriculum, which is an interesting question. The rest of the curriculum, it comes from the centre. So we have the particular arrangement for RE, but not for how we understand the rest of the curriculum. We also have particular arrangements for religious observance. There's no problem with having mass in the school day or having prayers in the school system, in state schools. So that is fairly straightforward.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other points or observations? We always have the possibility that someone will challenge us in the courts. There have been a few cases where people have gone to the courts, and so far, nothing has changed. So far, nothing. We still have this arrangement. Okay, let's just give an example. Right, I'm going to just look at some of the benchmarks for it. We have the curriculum structured into various themes, eight themes. One of the themes is called Hours of God. Hours of God is really the theme which looks at liturgy and prayer. Now it's done. And the benchmarks, like the curriculum documents, are written in the first person. And the first person is obviously the pupil, clearly. So this is for a kind of mid to late primary stage. A kid maybe between 10 and 11, maybe 9, 10, 11. The expectation would be that after their lessons, they can say these things with confidence. And how do you know they have done that? Well, it's up to the teachers to plan some teaching and learning and assessment stuff, so to speak, to allow them to say that. So they should be knowing that I can recognise Mary's significance within the Catholic tradition. I know that celebrating her feast days and praying to God through Mary can enrich my life. So very straight, clear Marian devotion. Again, these are the benchmarks. That's a summary document. If you go to the appropriate and corresponding line in the curricular syllabus, it's much enriched. I know that the Mass is at the heart of the Catholic community life, and I'm developing an understanding of how to participate fully in this celebration. So they're young kids, they're just in the stage of their journey, but the Mass is central. And the final one about liturgical experiences, the Mass, the ability to respond in symbols and take part in rituals in order to worship God. Okay, what do we see there? We see lots of things going on. That's just a very simple extract, don't you? You can see that. But what is clear, what should be clear to all of us here now, is that these are very catechetical, aren't they? They're very much designed to develop the faith life of the child. Now, we bear in mind, these are on the government website. These are not within a catechetical section of the diocesan website. These sit on the government's website as how RE should be done in the Catholic school. It's not without its problems, is it? It's not without its problems if the child is a Catholic, but maybe not a regular attender at liturgical services. An assumption seems to be made that lots of other things are happening in the school and in the life of the family. Assumption is made that they will worship God and not just talk about God. So there's a presumption or an assumption of faith. So that is one of the characteristics of RE in Scotland, that I had no part in writing these, the syllabus, but we can see clearly a commitment to offering RE as an invitation to faith in the school setting. Now, some would say it's too much one way or too much the other way. We can have these legitimate debates. I think what's significant for me is that the official website for education is hosting what is clearly a way of doing religious education, which is wholly committed to catechesis within the school. And well, there are debates internationally about where the best locus for catechesis is. In Scotland, there seems to be an understanding that catechesis is what's going on in the school on a daily basis. So, as we look now at education for and in faith, I should say that do many of you use the Veritas primary syllabus in schools? Yeah, you have to, don't you? Well, all I can say, and I've said it just, I was talking to some of the officials in Rome recently, well, 3 years ago, who deal with these things, and they are quite impressed by the Irish way of doing things. So I think there's something going on which is worth just to say that. They think the Irish Veritas syllabus is a very good model for religious education in English-speaking in countries. That's... as we say, from the horse's mouth, so to speak. It was seen as a good way of doing things. So just bear that in mind. I'm not here to say the Scottish way is the way you have to follow. It simply is part of this idea of how things are done on the whole in our country. I think the learning can take place both ways. Any other questions or observations? Who's thinking, I wonder what's for dinner? Is it soup? Is it steak? Is it lamb stew or something? Who knows what it could be? We're nearly there. Right. Good. Good. Very good question. Right. Okay. Let me go back a step. In Scotland, I don't know the situation here. In Scotland, religious education is a subject title for the Catholic schools. In the non-denominational sector, it's called religious and moral education. So we have two separate curricular structures. Now, in the non-denominational sector, it is, as you would imagine, much much broader in the range of religions it treats. Though there is still a very clear idea in the language that Christianity has more call on the time of the curriculum because of the Scottish traditions. In the Catholic curriculum documents, other world religions is the title that's used, and the focus would really be on Judaism and Islam, not anything else. These are the two where there'd be an expectation of some teaching of Islam and Judaism. Not to say others could not be part of the curriculum, but that's the recommendation. That's some recognition of the place of Islam and Judaism in Catholic schools is important. So there's no drive to look at other religions or have a multi-faith approach to that. Okay, they are studied, yet again. But the other thing about Scotland is the curriculum is not a national curriculum, it's their guidelines, so schools can have a bit of freedom. They're not tied to it. There's a bit of freedom there, which maybe is not the case south of our border. Okay, there's a bit of freedom. Any other questions? Okay, can we just move on? Justin?
Just one. In terms of, say, a Catholic pupil who's going to a state school, mm-hmm. that's other than Catholic, how might their experience, in a sense, differ from the student in the Catholic school?
Okay.
And I mean that in the context of the practical day-to-day experience of education for the child.
Very little. Yeah. Essentially, the non-denominational sector would have religious education looking at a broad variety of religions and moral questions. Okay? Not quite with the structure. There'd be less emphasis on religious observance and the daily life of the school. There'd be opportunities. Yeah, people would have the opportunity. There'd be a recognition of religion, yes. There is an examinable subject called religious and moral and philosophical education, which is done in both Catholic and non-denominational schools. So there's a syllabus for that. But for those not doing the syllabus, there would be a difference. There should be a difference in the content of the RE curriculum. They're quite different approach, quite different documents. Again, you might find that each school has its own particular way of doing things. So there's no blanket answer to that. But the documents do have different approaches laid out, quite obvious when you put them side to side. Okay. Now just to get into a sort of final section, again, don't want to get heavily involved in this sort of theology of things here, but it's simply to give us just a chance to reflect a little on this quest of education for and in faith. And we are doing things in a faith-based school. Is one term we use, a faith-based school, and it's a faith, it's a religion which drives, which underpins the way of life of the culture of the school. And we would be okay with that. And our question here is often a question I would raise with our students is the word faith has to be, as we say today, unpacked a little. And then we go back a wee bit to some of these definitions of faith about fides quare, fides quan, the deposit of faith or the ascent of faith. You're doing things in faith or through faith. So the point here is just to go to the bottom point. Pope Francis a few times recently has warned of, in his words, a new Pelagianism or a return of Pelagianism. And one of the great gifts of Pope Francis, he's got many gifts, obviously, but one of the great gifts is he can say things which are full of meaning and they can be very hard-hitting. But sometimes that message is missed. So when he talks, I could find the actual quote, it was quite in the last couple of months, he is concerned about approaches to life and to education which almost dismiss the role of grace and the role of the divine, the role of the supernatural. And the idea that we can do things just through hard work and our own effort. He is saying, well, that's not the Christian way. And that's not to say we don't do these things, we don't encourage these things. His concern is that we could easily go into a mindset that it's a do-it-yourself approach. So it's really an invitation to faith and an invitation to rediscover the role of grace. And I was saying to the students in St. Angela's this morning, one of the great people of the history of Catholic education is St. Augustine of Hippo. And he's, again, a very quotable person. Lots of writings and people pick out a couple of lines here and there and they use them in posters and whatnot. But the one which I like is this one, and it's the English translation. Why go to school to find out what the teacher thinks? Think about that. What about getting a T-shirt with that on it? Why go to school to find out what I think the teacher thinks? What was he getting at there? Is he trying to limit the role of the teacher or to diminish the role of the teacher? No, he's saying the role of the teacher is to be the medium of grace, and the role of the teacher is to point the student, the pupil, to the truth, i.e. Jesus. So it's a way of understanding the role of grace, that all of our education, all of our work in catechesis and education is our response to the call through grace to live our apostolate, whatever it may be, in the life, in the mission of the school. It's to see ourselves very much as part of a tradition, a community, not just of the present, but also of the past. We are continuing that stream of tradition from past to the present and looking ahead to the future. So we have, again, just sort of some key, I'm not looking for answers, I'm just to pose these questions. One of the great gifts of the church to educational thought is, my theory is, the examination of conscience. You know, the examination of conscience, the traditional examination of conscience. Every day or every night we ask ourselves, how did I do in this one? Now, have you noticed how that has crept in to performance management? That we are given targets against which we have to assess ourselves. Maybe not faith targets, but how well did you do this year, or this month, or this last semester? How can you do? What's your point for improvement for the next session? That's very much the language of the examination of conscience and spirituality. We ask ourselves a question, and if our answer is not great, we have a point for improvement. I will do this. I will try my best through God's grace to do that. And this idea of questions has informed a lot of what we are doing in education. It's a good thing. So are we educating in good faith? Are we happy to be in our faith position? Are we happy to stay, not blindly in that space called Catholic education, but are we happy in that space called and we can leave that space in order to have a fruitful and honest dialogue? Or do we maybe seek to gain approval by maybe diminishing our tradition a little just to look better in the eyes of others? That's something we need to all consider. And do we see Catholic education as what I would maybe suggest as a cultural mission? It's more than just the learning of some skills or competences. It's about developing as a cultural mission which has come from the church. I'll get an example in the next page or two. But we are more than just the teaching of skills and knowledge. It's about using these from the life of the church to develop as human beings. But also I think this is the one which I personally think is very important, as we spend a lot of time in the church discussing, thinking about Catholic education, don't we? And we're often been by that, what's going on in the Catholic school. And that's great. But do we as a community spend enough time thinking about how to support the family and the parish in their life of catechesis, in the way they present the face of Christ to those who come through their doors? Do we see the school as a way into the family, a way into the parish? Again, there will be different answers depending on your countries and dioceses. But it's a question which really reorientates us when we talk of Catholic education. It's much more than what goes on in the school. And one thing that I find quite a challenge is there is a school of thought, and there's some research from the Theos Work Tank, think tank in England, which says that, I'll summarise it, that again, this is there from Theos, would say that faith life of an adult is governed more by their experience in the family than what happens in a school. That the life of the family, and by extension the parish, is much more important as a predictor of future faith life than the life of the school. That's not my words. I'd have to look at the data more closely, but that would be the position this particular think tank would take in one of its recent studies about faith development. Quite thought-provoking, I would say. So, food. It's almost tea time, isn't it? Who likes Italian food? No? What do you mean you don't like Italian food? Who said they don't like Italian food? Really? My goodness. Okay. If you don't like Italian food, just pretend that's something you do like, okay? So how can we give ourselves an opportunity to ensure that the Catholic community in the schools has a good vision for evangelization and catechesis? Maybe we can look at the word joy. Does joy come into our life? I don't mean joy of just always telling stories or jokes. That's fine. But is there a simple joy which governs our professional life? Are we joyful? Are we filled with joy at the fact we are Catholic teachers or Catholic principals or whatever we do? Does that fill us with joy? A genuine joy? It doesn't mean you don't have bad days. You all have bad days. Maybe today was a bad day. Maybe it's getting worse now. But that kind of joy, is that because I'm going to work, yes, I'm quite happy because I want to be there. And that joy, how do we look at that joy? Well, we can temper it. And the one of the analogies I quite like is this idea of the feasts and the fasts. We quite like feasts, don't we? We're up there. We'll go for it. First at the party. The fasting is maybe, it's not quite the one that brings people in, is it? Well, it could be, but we have this cycle of the feasts and the fasts, which really allow us to celebrate and to pray with our senses, not just with our words and heart. We pray, when we feast and fast, we pray with our senses, the sense of taste and the sense of the eyes, okay? And, okay, we have the obvious one, the Advent fast, the Christmas feast. We have the Lenten fast and the Easter feast, okay? That's fairly ingrained in our culture, isn't it? We do all these sorts of things, and that's great. Though I wonder sometime back home if Advent really is a time of fasting. It's not really. It's just a time of feasting starting early. So maybe there's a mission there to rediscover Advent's a slogan for next year. How to live Advent. It's the coming. We're not there yet. But let's not anticipate the feast until it's there, because when it comes, we've got another while to do it. I mean, you could argue that, some would argue that, you get the 40 days of Christmas end in the Feast of the Presentation on February the 2nd, so we'll have 40 days of feasting. Have you heard of Dry January? Mm-hmm. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Such a crime. Some people say that once you get to Boxing Day, glad it's all over. Have you heard that before? I'm glad it's all over. Well, your response is, no, it's only just beginning. And that's a joyful, but it's also the true theological point. Christmas Day is the beginning of the Christmas octave into the Christmas season. So we have to maybe rediscover the Advent Christmas dimension and not just have one. Our previous Prime Minister, First Minister Alex Salmond, said that in Scotland we have the Feast of St. Andrew on November the 30th. We have Christmas, New Year and Robbie Burns Day in January. He called that Scotland's time. He's creating his own liturgical calendar. That's what they're doing, sacred. And we've all these different events, or the month of this, the day of that. And nothing wrong with that. But we have to return to our core liturgical calendar and say, well, We are in Advent just now. We are in Christmas. We are now in ordinary time. We're looking towards Lent, followed the 6 weeks of Lent, followed by that 6 weeks of Easter, when we have the culture of joy at its height in the Catholic Church. So we can find ways, simple ways, to let the children experience those days of joy, days of feasting, saints' days. If a child has a saints' day or a birthday or whatever, we mark it in some way with in the school. I'm sure you do that already. But that's a good point to say, well, how can we improve in that? How can we make sure that on a feast day, yes, they'll go to Mass, because that would be unexpected, but maybe there's something else happens in the school to let them see, well, it's not a normal day, let's maybe be radical and go off timetable in the afternoon. Could we do that? So they can say, well, yeah, a feast day, we went to Mass, but we did this in the afternoon, something you wouldn't normally do. And then they associate this idea of the holiday. Bear in mind the etymology of holiday. Where does the word holiday come from? Two words. Holy. Holy in day. It's a holy day. Okay, so enjoy your holy days by making them holy, but in a sense of joy. And in doing that, what we're hopefully doing implicitly is just building up a culture of daily life is where we find the means of worship of God. That's taken in my wee table in the kitchen in Italy, just some wine and pasta and salad. All of that salad stuff was from somebody's garden, as was it. So there's a simplicity there of the fruits of the earth being used to just to keep us going, right? Keep us going. It's a church in a village in Italy where I go every day. My father's from that village, and that just it's a small 100 yards long, no more than that, village parish, destroyed in the war and rebuilt after the war by local people. The community built the church again. They rebuilt the church just by getting out there and doing it. And we can do that. We can rebuild our schools. So one thing which we want to consider as a means of showing the face of Catholic education, is our school, is our college, is our university, if it's Catholic, would other people see that as the best place to be? Because if we want to attract people to the vision of our way of life, we attract them through the human qualities as well as the supernatural qualities. So the teacher who maybe it could be able to not be a Catholic, who comes to a Catholic school, are they left in, wow, what a place this is. How well structured is our curriculum? How well looked after is our staff room? How well the staff are encouraged to do the best and do all the things they can do? Do they see those human values in practice? Because that is one of the first stages of faith, that this human element is put together so well that people are attracted. What's making you do that? So are they a place of truth, beauty and goodness? Now, of course, yeah, like all of us, we have days when we get quite tired, and some of this high-level language can be maybe a bit nauseating. Yeah, I get that. But it's really meant to remind us that we've got this star ahead of us, the star of truth, the star of beauty, the star of goodness. And our RE, our Catholic culture, is informing the life of the school. We could make the case, some would make the case, that many people who would not dream of attending church on a regular basis would consider sending their kids to a Catholic school if the school was offering a good education. And that's what happens all the time, isn't it? Yeah. They'll choose the Catholic school because they like the education. They might not really be keen to go to the church service. Maybe there are reasons for that. We don't know. But the school is like the portal. It's the front door. It's the way in which a child and then the family can become maybe reacquainted, or maybe for the first time see or experience a Catholic way of life. And it might well be that's as much as we can do in the Catholic school for some kids, is to give the family the chances to come and see, to dip their toe into that water, and we leave the rest to grace. And as always, it's good to remember the response of Mary, be it done to me according to your will, that often we are not in control of what we do, and we have to respond in in faith and in grace to God's direction and just really see what happens. Right, thank you.